Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
All right, so I've been thinking about this spot all night and all day today. I'm really intrigued because I'm going to be on a couple of these Zoom meeting rules calls in the next couple of weeks. And Buster actually was there in person in Dunedin, Florida. That's the spring training home of the Blue Jays. And that leads us to the Buster Only Report brought to you by Jack Pocket. Buster, is your head spinning or will these rules be adapted quickly?
Yeah, my head is definitely spinning. Of course, I'm thinking about how players think, and I'm looking for the loopholes. I'm looking for all the, you know, the nuances, the things that they haven't thought of. It's going to be a lot, and we ought to just fast forward. Let's to April. There are going to be a lot of veteran players who initially are going to complain. There's going to be some griping. There might be some big moments in games that are going to be affected by this. I do think they're doing the right thing, and I do think it's going to be a better product when they come out the other side, but there is going to be an adjustment period because, boy, there is a lot of nuance.
I just want to ask you about the larger bases. That's the first thing I want to say. So 3 inches bigger. I know first base is like that. I just want to know, is second base and third base like that? Because if second base is also larger, then first base is 6 inches closer to second base than any time before.
Well, I think the geometry is that it's 4.5 inches.
Okay.
Was described to us, you know, that it's 4.5 inches closer. And it's interesting, Michael, that you mentioned that because, you know, I've had spoken with managers, I've spoken with general managers during the wintertime. And what I got back in terms of, you know, the question of which of these rule changes can have the biggest impact, I kept on getting back. It's the bigger bases because, you know, the geometry of baseball has basically been the same for so long. And all of a sudden, you know, infielders who have it calibrated in their mind how much time they have to throw when you got a, you know, a medium fast guy or a fast guy or a slow-footed catcher, all of that changes when you're talking about bases that are a little bit bigger. And I think also it's going to have a significant impact on base stealing. They showed us one chart today where the number of stolen bases in minor league games, you know, jumped up by, I want to say the number was close to 40%. So it's going to be a big increase in how it's going to affect the running game, I think, across the board. It's going to make a difference.
Oh, well, listen, it's changing the landscape of the game. I mean, the stolen bases were few and far between because it wasn't an analytical thing they wanted to do because the percentages didn't work for them. Now they're going to work big time for them, Buster. I'm not going to say that Ricky Henderson's records are going to be challenged, but you're going to now see something that wasn't really part of the game into becoming a major part of the game.
Well, and I do think it, you know, I don't know if it's going to, we're going to go to the point where you get a, you know, guys are stealing 120 bases because let's face it, the concern about injuries in this day and age is so much higher than it was back then. But to your point, the way the teams analyze the analytics and inform decisions based on the numbers, if you see, you know, an opportunity to get 90 bases, especially in close games, they're going to take it. And that's obviously all going to be affected. The running game is going to be affected by these new rules with pitchers stepping off the rubber, throwing to first base, and the fact that pitchers and catchers are going to be backed into corners by, you know, one or two pickoff throws. And the base runners are going to have a better idea of whether or not they can take off.
Well, let me ask you this way. Is there a minor leaguer that didn't think he was going to make the major leagues? He's a speedster but doesn't hit for a lot. Now all of a sudden feels like his percentage chances of making the big leagues have grown exponentially by the fact that now he can become a major player under these rules.
Well, I mean, you're right. You know, the guy who maybe didn't get an opportunity But now teams look at him as, hey, you know what? We think that a guy can come up here and steal 40, 50 bases. Maybe that helps that player's case. And, you know, and I think it also helps the guy who maybe doesn't think, and Anthony Rizzo comes to mind. You know, he probably is not someone who's necessarily going to run, but he's a smart base runner. He's going to have opportunities. I think it's going to make all teams, you know, look for those chances to, you know, to take an extra 90 feet in the way that the Yankees did last year.
All right. One thing I want to check out, is it still 90 feet from home plate, the first base? Is the 3 inches on the outfield side? Because that's a calculus that has worked since Doubleday. And you said about the shortstop.
Right.
So is it still 90 feet or is it 89 feet, 9 inches?
You know, from corner to corner, I don't know what the measurement is, Michael, but it's shorter. Okay.
Really? So that's going to be a big deal.
Yeah.
Yes. And that's why I keep on getting back from the managers and general managers. Like all of this, the things that we've grown accustomed to through the years, they don't necessarily apply anymore. You know, this was not my description. I can't remember where I read it first, but it really does look like, and they had the, you know, the old base and the new base side by side. It does look like a giant pizza box. Like if you ordered a large pizza in college and you wanted to play wiffle ball, that's what you would have used back in the day.
All right, so let's talk about the pitch clock because that's important. So 15 seconds when no runners on base, 20 seconds when runners on base. But let's get into dive deep into the amount of throws that you have, because the more I read it, Buster, I can't imagine any pitcher making a second pickoff throw. Because then they lose all leverage. I could see one pickoff attempt, but two, the next one you got to pick them off or it's a balk.
I agree with you. Right. Once you become predictable for the base runner, you're dead. And so you have to at least have that measure of doubt in the base runner's mind about when he can take off. That's going to be a big factor. Again, feeding into the running game. Yeah, and a couple things about just about the pitch clock and defensive shifts, which I found interesting today. You cannot use replay review to review anything regarding the pitch clock, which also includes the pitcher's delivery. So you heard all this, you know, talk today about some of the deliveries that guys like Kenley Jansen use. They're out. Like, you can't do that thing where you shimmy and shake on the mound as you come set. And so that can't be reviewed. But anything with defensive shifts can be reviewed. So if you see a shortstop move closer to second base, if he you know, invades that space and a team sees it but the umpires don't see it, you can ask for instant replay on that. So there is a ton of nuance in this.
Where do you think, Buster, we're going to see the most sort of confusion and stoppages over the first few weeks of the season?
I don't think there's any doubt the pitch clock is going to be the adjustment, the biggest adjustment for the players. You know, they showed us a poll that they did of minor league players in which they asked them, you know, how long did it take you to get adjusted? And most of the player, you know, the large portion said a week, but some said almost the entire season.
Wow.
You know, and you guys know that they're veteran players who will say, look, I you know, I have my routine. I got to take my gloves off. I got to do. You're not going to be able to do that anymore. That is going to be a big deal. I've actually, you know, the focus is on whenever we get into the postseason, the pitchers who work really slowly, and I'm thinking of like a David Price, for example. But, and I've had so many people, people in baseball say to me, they think the group that's going to be more affected by this detrimentally are hitters. They think that the hitters are the ones who will adapt slower than the pitchers. But let's face it, we're going to get into April, and there's going to be a big spot, and they're going to call an automatic ball on a veteran pitcher. That guy's going to go nuts. He's going to rip the system. You know, I had one baseball official say to me today, yeah, we know. Like, there's going to be a wave of that complaining at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, the only thing I could say is it too much too fast, Buster? Could they have piecemealed this a little bit more than having everything happen at once? But does that kind of tell you where baseball felt they were heading? That they really couldn't afford to sit on their hands any longer, that looking at proactively the future of this sport, that they really felt like it was in trouble if they didn't do something quickly?
I don't think they feel like they're in trouble. You know, I haven't heard anybody say that, but I think they understand that, you know, the pace of the current product, you know, one ball put in play every 4 minutes, does not work with their with a lot of the people who they're trying to sell the game to. They're hoping that they get that down to, you know, one ball put in play every 2.5 minutes versus every 4 minutes. And I personally agree with them. I think I've told you guys, I got my focus group of one, my 18-year-old son, who loves sports. He ingests sports all the time. And I ask him, hey, Jake, you want to watch a game with me? You want to sit down? No interest, because it's too slow. And people in baseball know that. And in fact, you know, I know that the Player Association Executive Committee last year, you know, voted unanimously to say we don't agree with these rule changes. I've had a lot of players say to me, yeah, this would be great. You know, Vinny Pascantino, who was a rookie with the Royals last year, was on my podcast this week, and he talked about that. You know, he played with it in the minor leagues. He said it's so much better. It's so much faster. And he said you're going to see a big difference.
All right, so getting back to the pitch clock. So you have 15 seconds to deliver the ball once you receive the ball. You're the pitcher. And the batter has to be in 8 seconds after the pitcher receives the ball. He must be in the batter's box. What happens with a step off? Because you always see pitchers having a hard time coming to an agreement on a pitch. What happens if they step off?
You have that counts as effectively a throw to first base, okay?
But if there's nobody on base.
During the course of a plate appearance. Oh, if there's no – well, they will – they still have the option to reset the pitch clock. You can step off, but you're allowed a certain number of step-offs. But eventually, you know, you run out of those, and then they call a ball.
Interesting. All right, so one of the rules that I don't like, I mean, because I know that it needs some fixing, I cannot believe that they have now gone forward and made the Manfred man, the runner at second, a permanent thing. I have not read this anywhere, Buster. Is that a permanent thing in the postseason, too, or they go back to normal baseball?
No, they go back to normal baseball. I agree with you. I think you ought to play the same rules you do in the postseason that you do in the regular season. And you and I both know this is all about money. This is all about protecting players, the perception that you're protecting players by getting them off their feet, not extending your pitching staff, not having to make calls in the middle of the game to call up minor leaguers for the next day. It's all about dollars and about trying to keep the product, again, confined within that 3.5 you know, four-hour window.
But here's the thing that bothers me about the runner at second rule. All I keep reading, you know, we want to do it for the fans. We're doing it for we do the show 4 hours a day, Buster. The fans don't want it. Fans don't like that. I think the players, I think some of the writers, they want to get out of the ballpark earlier. I think one of the great things in baseball is have an 18-inning game and to see how a manager manages a pitching staff and manages it the next day. Now that's taken away.
I got to tell you, like last year, you know, post-COVID, or the first year post-COVID would have been the first time they used it in 2020 and then they took it away. I was surprised that they took it away because I had heard so many people at the team level, front office, some players saying, boy, this is great. And what we were told at that time by Major League Baseball was, yeah, fans, they didn't like that. Everything you just said, Michael, was exactly what we got from Major League Baseball, and now they're flipping it. So they're ignoring one group or another. There's no doubt that the impetus for change comes from the teams. The teams want the games ended.
Yeah, I completely agree with Michael. I hate the runner at second base. But I just don't know what you do about it because you're right. These 18-inning games, they're fun in the moment. They get a reaction the next day. But the ratings aren't great. People aren't staying up till 3 o'clock in the morning to watch it. And it comes at the sacrifice of the next game when nobody plays because they played so many innings the game before and guys getting hurt. So you have to try to avoid those types of games. I just don't – I wish there was a better way, Buster. I haven't thought of a way to do it.
Not in this day and age when, you know, pitching staffs are built so much differently than they used to be. Every team used to have a long guy who, you know, could absorb 5 or 6 innings. I was talking with Alex Anthopoulos, you know, head of baseball ops for the Braves yesterday about this, and he said that, you know, in a close game, you get to the 6th, 7th inning, and you start to get a sense that you might have extra innings. In the past, they would start in the front office preparing for the wave of moves that they would have to make after a game. And if they had a veteran pitcher who is out of options, once, you know, they needed to rely on that guy for a 2nd or 3rd inning, they knew that they would effectively – be taking him off the roster right after the game. you know, I used the word chaos in my conversation with Alex, and he said that's exactly what it does now. And the first domino in that is this culture of having relief pitchers throw just one innings. That's completely changed how, you know, teams put together pitching staff day to day, and it runs against that, you know, the grain of playing long games.
Does baseball think, Buster, that the pitch clock is going to take velocity, some velocity out of the game because pitchers don't have 30 seconds to recharge their arm?
You know, I've heard that at the team level. No one said that with Major League Baseball today. Joe Martinez, who was the former pitcher with the Giants, did the presentation today. He didn't say that. I have heard that from front offices, and I've heard it from agents. They just feel like literally, you know, the recovery time for these guys, it's in effect, it would almost be like, you know, an NFL team going to a two-minute offense. Yes, you know, offensive linemen, players are going to get tired when you have to work faster. That's what's going to happen with the pitchers.
You really have to wonder, though, I mean, how the umpires are going to keep track of all this, all the added responsibilities that they're going to have to actually notice this, where they are with the shift, keep an eye on the pitch count, pitch clock, keep an eye on when the batter steps into the box. They might need to add a fifth umpire, Buster.
Mm. Well, it's interesting. One of the things they told us about today was they're presenting all the umpires will have earpieces. They'll be in communication with each other. They'll be in a communication with the person who's running the timer, the pitch clock, up in the press box. By the way, that person, you talk about someone under scrutiny and the potential for controversy with how that person's doing his job. They'll be talking with each other. You know, umpires are going to be asked to enforce these rules in a way that I don't think they have in the past. For example, you know, one of the possible violations I asked about today. So what if a hitter, you know, asked repeatedly to step out because something blew in his eye?
Yeah, the Bernie Williams
talked about
move.
The umpires. Right, exactly. And you know what? You know, the response was, well, umpires will, you know, be monitoring that. They'll be on top of it. But you know and I know there's some umpires who will do that and some umpires who will not. Bob Davidson was always the umpire who called more balks by a factor of three than anybody else. And so it could vary from, you know, from crew to crew, and I suspect there probably should be some quality control with that as well. So, yeah, there is an absolute layers of administration that they're taking on as they put these rules in place.
Does the catcher have to throw the ball back to the pitcher immediately after the pitch is thrown, or can he hold on to it for 3 seconds to give his pitcher more of a blow?
An astute question. They said that what they saw in the minor leagues was that the most common, you know, way that the loophole that players are trying to create was the catcher holding onto the ball. So they actually, you mentioned that the hitters with 8 seconds have to be ready to participate in that pitch. Catchers have to be ready at 9 seconds. So they have to be a little bit ahead. And so the umpires have been advised and they've talked about this, you know, potential for catchers trying to slow everything down. Because as you say, the pitch clock's not going to start until the pitcher gets the ball back on the mound. But they are aware that that's one way that the players might, their catchers might push back.
And your thoughts on less of an opportunity for position players to pitch?
I think it was long overdue. When I first started covering baseball a million years ago, that was a fun thing when you would see that. And it was something you'd see maybe once a season. So to now have teams do that on a regular basis, I think it's kind of turned it into a joke. I still don't think they've really taken the next level of the administration that they need to, which is to reduce the pitching staff from day to day, the number of pitchers available, which will compel these teams to start to condition pitchers back to throwing more than one inning. That has caused, in my opinion, a lot of problems. I hope that's one of the rules that pushes teams back to extending some of the relief pitchers.
All right, so this is not a rules question, Buster, and I'm going to ask you because you've been around the game forever. So I'm watching the Super Bowl, minding my own business, getting ready for the Chiefs against the Eagles, and then Alex Rodriguez comes out onto the set on Fox and introduces Derek Jeter, who will now be a part of the Fox coverage. So I want to ask you, as a Yankee observer for a long time, this is a guy who dealt with the media in a very fair way, but it was like, you know, it was like going to the dentist. Now he's going to the opening of every Grand Union. What has changed? Why is this guy all of a sudden so out there with every? I never thought Derek would be a broadcaster. So what has changed?
maybe he just has this absolute need to be part of baseball. And this is, of course, only speculation. I haven't asked Derek because I would have guessed he would have been one of those guys who would go away and never come back.
Right.
But the fact that he, you know, ran baseball operation for the Marlins tells you that he misses it. And to go into the media, you're 100% right. I've said that to friends of mine, told Derek near the end of his career that when I would speak to journalism classes, because they'd always ask, what's it like to cover Derek Jeter? And I said, he's intentionally boring. And now he's got to go the opposite way. And you and I both know this about Derek, though. Derek's got opinions. You saw that in the captain. I'm going to be fascinated to see those opinions come spilling out of him now.
Yeah, I think, I've told a lot of people, because people ask me about this, too. He doesn't do anything unless he could be great at it. And I think that he could be really, really good at it because I saw him on The Captain. I did something for ESPN where I interviewed him for an hour just for employees, and he was funny and engaging and had great opinions.
Yes.
And if he brings it out on the air, you know what? He can end up being a star.
I completely agree with you. I remember when he hosted Saturday Night Live, and when I first heard that, I'm like, oh, my God, he's going to be a disaster. It's going to be awful. He was terrific.
Yep.
He has strong opinions, and now, you know, maybe he's been watching Charles Barkley and just has decided, you know what, I would love to do that. I'm going to go out there and put my opinions out there. It'll be fascinating.
Or is it a way, you don't see it in baseball a lot, but it's definitely in football with coaches who use it as a way to kind of get back into the fold, to get back into the game as a coach. Is that maybe his modus operandi here? He thinks this might be an easier path to get back into the game in some capacity?
Yeah, and Don, it's a great question, and I'll say it again. I have not talked to Derek about this. I have talked to other people in baseball. I think other than a Magic Johnson role like he has with the Dodgers, I think Derek's going to have a hard time getting into baseball ops, because the assumption is he's going to want stature. And I think the general feeling of folks with other teams is, you know what? He needs to do some more groundwork. Like, he needs to earn his stripes within organizations before he can do that. Maybe this will help him do that. I do know, you know, Derek related to people that I know that he felt like he gained a lot more perspective from his times with the Marlins about how difficult the front office job is.
All right, before we let you go, we're talking with Buster Olney. Who's winning the World Series this year? Who do you have?
There you go.
I'm toying with the idea. I think I'm going to pick the Padres over the Mariners. I'm going to go away from being Captain Obvious. I just love what the Padres are doing. I know how devoted their owner is to winning. They're going to get Fernando Tatis Jr. back on April 20th. They're going to have Juan Soto settled in. That, to me, and the Dodgers are taking the payroll way down. I think the Padres have a chance to win that division. I think Padres are going to win the World Series.
Look at you. And you got the Padres in your blood, too. You covered them at one point.
Yeah.
I did. Right. Tony Gwynn would be very proud of that pick.
Good stuff. Thanks, Buster.
Thanks,
we appreciate
Buster.
It.
Thanks, guys.
All right, that's the Buster Olney report.
Sure was.
There you go.
Brought to you by Jack Pocket. Brought to you by Jack Pocket. Powerball is $57 million. Mega Millions is $84 million. Play official state lottery games on your phone with Jack Pocket. Download the Jack Pocket app and get your first ticket free using code ESPN. You must be 18 or older to play. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem wants help, call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY. Visit jackpocket.com/TOS for full terms of service.
On Friday at the Garden, I saw Dave Sims, the television voice of the Mariners.
Yep.
And he is absolutely giddy about this Mariner team. He thinks they're going to be one of the best teams in baseball.
Well, let me tell you, the ratings bonanza we would get for a Padres-Mariners.
Yeah, Fox executives would be dancing.
They're jumping up and down hoping they get that.
Let's take a brief timeout. Some more information coming forth about Aaron Rodgers.
Oh.
Let's not forget about that. You know what I'm talking about? Right here on YES at 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, so our producer, Anthony, came up with a great question that we didn't ask Buster, so I just texted him, and I haven't heard back from him yet. Anthony's dad came up with a question.
What's the question?
Is a catcher allowed to make that snap throw attempt to pick off somebody at first base after a pitch?
Excellent question.
And if he, in fact, does that, is that considered one of the two pickoffs that a pitcher has?
I mean, it would just be a guess on my part. I would think no. It's a different entity. And that's exciting. Like, a pickoff attempt's not exciting, but a catcher throwing down the first base, the potential of him missing the first baseman and it going down the line, and I would not want to see that taken out. I would think, just a guess, it wouldn't count.
See, my guess is it would count because it's a pickoff. Because that's the way that you would counteract a pitcher not being able to throw over, and with the Yankees, they have the advantage of a great defensive catcher like Trevino, who's able to just snap a throw down there, and that could serve as a pickoff.
But here's what – part of it is because it's several seconds you can't get back. Most of the time it's not very exciting. And what happens when you do it, the crowd usually boos. I don't think a crowd usually boos when a catcher makes the attempt. It's kind of exciting, right? I wouldn't want to see that taken out. But that doesn't mean that I could be wrong. I just would think that it doesn't happen that often, and – it's an exciting thing I would want to keep.
Well, I'm waiting for Buster to return the message, and
great
I'll
question,
see if he
though.
Has an answer. Thank you, Anthony's dad. We talked a lot about Aaron Rodgers yesterday. I still don't know if he's in the dark hole yet, but he's certainly heading there. Rich Cimini, who covers the Jets, has covered the Jets for over 30 years.
Oh, yeah.
He was asked, do the Jets have a real chance at Rodgers?
I think they have a chance to get Aaron Rodgers. I really do. I think it's either going to be Green Bay or the Jets for Rodgers. I have a hunch that maybe he stays in Green Bay, in which case I think the Jets would pivot, and maybe Jimmy Garoppolo then would be their starter to open it up. I don't think the Jets are going to get Derek Carr. I sure think they're going to be interested, but I think Rodgers is the one they want.
All right, now, Rich was also asked, are the Jets worried about Rodgers being a little bit of a diva, or in the vernacular of this show, a bit of a nozzle? Here's what Rich said.
I don't think it's a factor. I really don't. I think the Jets really want this guy. Yes, there is that aspect to it. He's moved into the diva category. And he is a diva, and he does things in an odd way. But you know what? I think the Jets front office and I think Jet fans would be willing, as soon as he throws his first three-touchdown game and goes 20 for 27, I think they'd be willing to put up with all that. And suddenly he'd go from diva to eccentric personality.
Isn't that what pretty much we said yesterday, guys?
Yeah.
You know, if he plays well, then all the nozzleness just goes away.
A lot of his nozzles during the offseason, there's some things that rub you the wrong way, but we've asked this question a bunch of times. Has it affected him on the field? I don't think it really has. That thumb affected him more than anything else. He won back-to-back MVPs the 2 years before that. He was just as nozzly. So, there'll be things that roll our eyes. He'll give us tons of content during the course of the show. But if it doesn't affect them on Sunday, what does it matter?
Now, Rich surprises me when he said the Jets actually have an advantage over the Las Vegas Raiders.
The one thing the Jets have, if he goes to the Raiders, yeah, they have some pretty good skill players, and they have Devontae Adams there. We know they have a strong relationship, but he's got to learn an entirely new offense under a coach who, let's face it, hasn't had the greatest of relationship. You know, he can rub some quarterbacks the wrong way. So if he goes to the Jets, he's got an OC in Hackett that he's worked with, that he knows, that he likes. He doesn't have to learn a new offense. When guys are in the latter stages of their careers, they don't want to have to learn a new offense. They just want to go in and pick it up where they left off and have a seamless transition. And that's one of the advantages the Jets have in this situation.
Does that advantage, Don, outweigh the state tax?
If he's talking about competitiveness, it shouldn't. But if he's just talking about wanting to play football and do it making more money, then yes, it's going to. If you want to win another championship or another MVP, is that the place to go? Yes, they've got a good running back. They've got a very good wide receiver. But so much competition within that division, it's going to be tough. The Jets, I think there's talent there, and I think it's more wide open in their division than it is in the West. But I don't know his motivation, Michael. Is it the best chance to win a Super Bowl, or is it to make more money? And there's nothing you can do about the latter. Jets can't call up and change the New Jersey state tax.
No, I don't think they can. Although Woody has government ties.
That is true. He knows people.
Yeah.
He used to be in the government.
Let's talk about where they pivot if they don't get Rodgers. Rich addressed that.
I think it's Garoppolo or Ryan Tannehill. Now, I should mention, you know, the other day they just hired the former Titans OC, you know, Todd Downing. So yep. Downing, of course, obvious connection to Ryan Tannehill. And so now he's the Jets passing game coordinator. So they have a connection there. And, of course, Robert Saleh was with San Francisco when Jimmy Garoppolo, you know, took him to the Super Bowl that year. And so you have that connection there.
What is it just me? I want to pull the people on the show. Does Tannehill leave you empty? I mean, is that the pivot? If they pivot to Tannehill, there's going to be a lot of disappointed people.
I got to tell you, my tank isn't all that full on Garoppolo either. honestly, he's a nice quarterback, and he's played in a Super Bowl, but you know, an offensive genius didn't want him. There's injury situations there. I'm sorry, I would rather have Derek Carr than Garoppolo.
And honestly, Ryan Tannehill, with all due respect,
jabroni.
I mean, he's fine.
It's an upgrade, but it's...
Well, it's not an upgrade, though. As we said, every single team in the league was an upgrade from what they were last year.
I think it's an upgrade from re-signing Mike White. You know, so it's a quarterback that's got a ton of postseason experience. He's played in a championship game, so you'll feel somewhat good about that. But he's not a needle mover. You're not gonna win games because of him. That was a run-oriented offense, don't lose the game for me type of quarterback. Unless they open it up, and maybe there's something we haven't seen, but all those years in Tennessee, it just felt like Tannehill was the reason why they couldn't get over the hump. Why would it change in New York?
Now, if the Jets don't make the playoffs, Rich said, hold on to your horses.
There absolutely is a mandate. If the Jets fall way short of the playoffs in 2023, I think there'll probably be a house cleaning.
House cleaning?
Oh, yeah. Boy.
Well, how could there not be?
Has to be. Don, do you agree with this assessment? Let's go to Morris. If the Jets end up with Garoppolo, you feel like this.
I see. Uh-huh.
No.
But if they end up with Tannehill, you feel like this.
You're hurting me.
Yes.
Yeah, now, I think Morris was very prescient there.
Yeah, that's just how I see uh-huh describes how I feel about Jimmy G.
But what we see now, you wonder, like, well, would it be Joe Douglas's fault if they don't get Rodgers or Carr? Maybe it might be beyond his control. They don't want to play here. But I think the way Woody Johnson would look at it is, we were 7-10 with virtually no quarterback play. Even if we get Ryan Tannehill, we should be able to win a couple more games and be in the postseason. And if we don't, it's on you.
And that's
a reasonable thought. Yeah, I think that's fair. We're not thrilled with Tannehill, but I think that would be enough with these weapons that they should be able to win three more games, go 10-7, and be a wild card team.
Can I tell you something, though? And I don't mean to give you some of this.
You're hurting me.
But honestly, like, I just played a season at, like, Tannehill-level quarterback with my team. It doesn't do enough. It is something. Zach Wilson was the quarterbacking of the Jets last year, when you think about what Flacco gave you, what Wilson gave you, and Mike White, with all due respect, even though he's Mike Bleepin' White, what they gave you was basically as bad as it can possibly be in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to Tannehill, you'll get a few more, you know, you get a couple more games potentially. And that would be great, but can they possibly go on a run?
I don't think
with
so.
With Tannehill? I don't think so.
And here's another thing I want to bring up. House cleaning, right? Why? The guy just selected the offensive and defensive rookies of the year. He's had great drafts. The one big mistake he's made is Zach Wilson. Now, you're going to fire him over that one big mistake, and that's a humongous mistake. Mom. Now, solid coaches get blamed for losing, but Joe Douglas has actually done a very good job restocking this roster.
That's a good point. It is a good point, but you've said it many times. Does the failure at quarterback wipe everything else out? If you're firing your coach, that's another failure in the eyes of Woody Johnson from Joe Douglas because you hired the wrong guy.
Yeah, but I think Woody would be firing the coach, not Douglas.
No, but with Woody, what he's saying is you got the wrong coach. You know, that hiring was Douglas's. So you didn't get me a quarterback. You didn't get me a coach. Those are the two most important pieces. Yeah, you assembled a lot of great talent, but that got me 7-10. So I wouldn't be surprised if it happened. Is it the right thing to do? I think it's reasonable. But I guess it can look upon unfair because of the tremendous job he did with the talent and the trades he made with Seattle. But, Michael, where are you going without a quarterback and a head coach? And if you're an owner and you feel that he failed at both of those positions, could it be a fireable offense? I guess so.
I guess. But one thing that Woody has to understand, the constant turnover does not help the way his team is thought of, and it doesn't help this team win. We've seen that. They haven't made the playoffs in forever. We'll come back. Take your phone calls, 1-800-919-3776. Kay LaGreca-Rosenberg and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Oh, darkness, my old friend. Ah, the Aaron Rodgers song. I've
come to talk. Love this song.
Now, Buster Olney today was at the Rules Seminar down in Dunedin. The brightest minds in baseball.
Yeah, I've heard.
Attended that meeting. The best reporters, the best baseball minds this country and Canada and the Caribbean and the Dominican have produced. They were down there. Buster just answered my text. Anthony Pusick's dad is well ahead of all of those great baseball minds. Buster said, "That's a great question. Nobody there asked it."
Really?
He said, "I will double back and try to get you an answer."
Wow. It's like the Iron Sheik's once said.
Excellent, excellent question.
Now, Anthony, I'm just curious. What's your dad's first name?
Anthony.
Oh, okay.
Not a junior.
You're not a junior.
No.
Does he sport?
You know what? That's a bad job.
Does he?
No, he didn't want that.
I know, but why do that then?
I don't tell you.
Like, if you're going to...
I wasn't involved in the decision.
His name's Anthony, and your name's Anthony.
Right.
Now, you can't be half pregnant. You got to go with the whole name then.
So what did they call you in the house? Aunt?
What you call me?
Anthony.
That's what my dad calls me.
Right. And he's Anthony.
Why aren't you a junior?
I don't have the same middle name.
Don, you agree. It's a bad job.
No. Well, my father, and I unfortunately didn't ask him and can't ask him, he hated junior. Did not want to have a junior.
That's basically what my dad
didn't want his name to be junior, didn't want to pass on junior, but he wanted to name me Don, so he gave me a middle name. My dad did not have a middle name. He purposely gave me Marco as my middle name so I would not be a junior.
See, it would have been great if you were a junior.
Wait, but he's a Don?
He was a Don.
You're only a junior if the name is identical.
But that's what I'm saying. To me, that's the only way to do it. What's the point otherwise?
Because he likes the name, but he doesn't like Junior.
But if you like the name,
but
it's
the
your
funny
name.
Part about Anthony's dad, favorite player, Ken Griffey Jr. Go figure.
That makes
it's
no
unbelievable.
Sense.
Go figure.
What are the odds?
Yeah, I don't know. But, Anthony, does he approve of the goatee?
No.
Oh.
So you don't listen to him or me.
I don't listen to anybody.
Two of the older men in your life. I mean, what are you doing?
Old men don't know what they're talking about all the time.
I admire it, though. When you do something, even what Peter's doing with that sweater.
Oh, we're back to that now.
When you know the only person that likes it, it's you, and that's enough, then you're in a really good place.
Thanks, Don.
Please don't.
I think you're in a dark place.
By the way, please don't compare my sweater to Anthony's beard. Well, that's not right.
I mean, I'm comparing it to the point where one's it's more expensive than the panned, other. But yet you don't care whether everybody hates it or loves it. You like it. That's all that matters. That's all that should matter.
Did you guys all see this? That Raquel Welch has passed away.
Yeah.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Double check.
She to me, one of the most beautiful women who ever lived.
Yes.
Incredible actress.
I always knew that meant a lot to her too. That you felt that way.
Yeah, especially.
Such a unique thought.
Well, you're such a jerk. She's
universally regarded. She's too old for my time.
Right.
But I know she's universally regarded as one of the hottest chicks of all time.
No, I didn't say hottest chick. I said the most beautiful women who ever lived.
Don't dumb it down like
that. Hottest chick adds a cheapness to it. What's wrong with you?
Is this 1956?
Hottest chick.
You think hottest chick was said in 56?
I don't know. It was objectionable then, too.
Listen, I think it didn't come around until the 80s.
The chick?
The combo of both.
Oh, you know, that's a good question. We've got to find out the origin.
You know, I'd like to make an admission about my sweater.
Okay, it was free.
Well, yeah, of course. That's not an admission. That's I'm Peter Rosenberg. How are you? But Michael, come back to me, Michael.
Yeah.
Come back to me. Get out of here.
I'm here.
Don't dirty text with Buster.
No,
talk to me.
I'm here.
I'd like to make an admission about the sweater.
It's ugly.
No, I like it, but right. The way I wore it in the commercial is a much better look than the way I'm wearing it now.
Why was it on a different body?
Can you stop being a jerk for 10 seconds?
You just can't stop him.
Don, I'll talk to you. You're at least a reasonable friend. I wore a solid colored shirt under it and had the sweater open like a jacket.
Right.
And it played much differently than today, where it looks buttoned up like a uniform. But that's because I'm wearing a t-shirt underneath that wouldn't look good on camera, so it's just covered. And I'm going somewhere else after this, and I'm going to just be wearing the T-shirt. So it's kind of like two different outfits.
Well, if you're going to subject our viewing audience to that, wherever you're going, why don't you subject them to that?
Because I'm wearing a hip-hop T-shirt, because I'm doing one ep after this, my podcast, and I'm wearing a T-shirt that I wanted to wear to that. And I didn't want to wear it on Yes, because we know what they can be like with T-shirts. So I wore the sweater buttoned up.
I know the people at Yes. I've known them a long time, since the beginning of the network.
Yeah.
I'm sure they would prefer any T-shirt to that you're wearing right now.
You've seen what's happening to you on Twitter, though, right?
Well, I don't care.
You know what's happening, Don, to Michael's to Michael on Twitter right now?
I'm going to go look.
Do you remember when that remember when What's-His-Face was pitching in the All-Star game a few years ago and the racist tweets came out? Why am I forgetting his name? The reliever from Milwaukee. What was his name, Ian?
Oh, Hader.
Hader. When Josh Hader's stuff came out. Michael, during this show, because of what he said about my sweater, they're digging through Twitter. And the old shirts, Don, that are being thrown up on Twitter right now, I was joking earlier when I said how horribly you dressed.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm seeing now, it's a suspendable offense.
I couldn't care less.
Are you
compared
sure?
To what you're wearing now, I've never been embarrassed by anything I wear.
Don, honest to God, I want you to go through them and truthfully tell me where you'd rank this sweater in the rest of the things you see.
I've got an answer to Anthony Senior's question.
Okay,
Buster did check it out
already.
Yep, he said the answer is what Don said. It does not count because it doesn't count as a rubber disengagement by the pitcher. That's a freebie. Buster's been told.
Wow.
Rubber disengagement.
And for the people tuning in late, what was the question again?
That's every teenager's nightmare.
Yeah, excuse me? No one wants that.
Every adult's.
Well,
depends on the situation.
The new rule that a pitcher can only throw over twice, and if you don't pick the guy off with the third one, it's a balk, whether the snap throw that the catcher makes from behind the plate the first, if that counts as a pickoff attempt, and because it's not a disengagement from the rubber, it does not. It's a great question by Anthony Senior.
Except it's still not. Do you think there'd be an increase in doing that?
Yeah, I think there might. That's the only way to pick off a guy without giving him the advantage.
That's why you'll rarely
see a pitcher throw over second time, because then all of the advantage goes to the runner.
Right.
You got to keep one in your pocket.
You got to keep one.
And I know that Buster said there are some hitters that are concerned about the pace as well. But I think runs are going to go way up. I think especially early in the season, the pitchers aren't going to get used to it. They're going to run like wildfire on the bases, Michael. I mean, you're just going to. It's such an advantage. Not only are you closer to the base, but knowing that you can only throw over two times, It's you're going to see an increase in stolen bases, which is going to be exciting. I hope it doesn't devalue the stolen base the way they devalued the home run. But there should be more action. I think there's going to be a lot more runs early on.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.